Welcome to Divine Intimacy Radio, a co-production of EWTN Radio and SpiritualDirection.com, where we provide you with a spiritual haven of rest and explore the riches of the wisdom of the saints and the path to union with God.
This is Dan Burke with Divine Intimacy Radio, your radio haven of rest, where we lift our eyes to heaven, to the wisdom of the saints, to the teachings of the church in order to set us free a bit or equip us to deal with the difficulties that we face every day, to strengthen us, to give us encouragement, to show us the way that God has for us. And that way is a way that's always marked by peace and joy when we say yes to it and follow it. But it can be difficult. And today we're going to be talking about something that is difficult. It's difficult in the sense that it can be difficult for us to approach the subject, but usually for those who give themselves over to it, it's easy for many reasons that we'll talk about today. But I'm here, as always, with, who are you again?
Melissa Elson.
Melissa Elson. She's our trusty co-host, but Melissa is trusty co-host and what else do you do?
I'm a mom.
Oh, no, but that's the most important thing you do. But she's also the producer of the show.
Oh, right, yes.
And the show gets its name from the book Divine Intimacy by Father Gabriel of St. Mary Magdalene. And this book, Father Gabriel is a holy priest who used to oversee the Tricianum in Rome, which was at one point the spiritual formation center of the universe, the Carmelite Center for Formation in Spiritual Theology. And before the Second Vatican Council, he wrote an amazing text that I recommend to anyone who wants to grow more deeply in their faith. And that text is called Divine Intimacy, and it has meditations for every day of the year.
That's right.
And so what we're doing, you know, as you know, for longtime listeners, we've done series on different topics on spirituality. And we're moving back to just reflecting a bit on some of the meditations that Father Gabriel's providing for us over the Lenten period.
Right. There's so much spiritual gold in this book that we felt that was a great idea to open that up to everyone and deepen their prayer life through this remarkable priest who has such great insight on the spiritual life.
And the breadth of his insight is quite remarkable. From what I understand, I have to look this up because I've said it several times, but I think his cause is underway, or there's some folks pursuing his cause. So he's obviously very holy and you can see that in his writings. But if you want to learn spiritual theology, of course, you can go to the Avila Institute for Spiritual Formation, which is, that's what we do. And in many ways, I was inspired to found the Institute by Father Gabriel and the work that he did. I've been using Divine Intimacy for years. But you can take courses at the Avila Institute. But for daily meditation outside of Scripture, you know, the best book on Scripture I've ever read, in my opinion, in terms of daily scriptural meditations, Father John Bartunek's The Better Part, which really is a beautiful reflection on every single passage in the Gospels. So if you want to do daily Lectio Divina, that text is really the best ever that I've ever encountered.
Yes.
But if you want to reflect on themes on spiritual theology that are in often are very challenging. And if you read it over the years, I don't know if you found this, Melissa, the challenges emerge in places they weren't before.
Right. Something new kind of pops out at you each time you read it. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's so deep and the topics vary so dramatically. It follows the liturgical seasons, of course, of Lent and Easter and Advent and major feast days and all of that. But even in ordinary time, it goes through a series of teachings on the interior life, and it seems that there's always something new to be discovered there.
Right.
Ancient and ever new. So what are we talking about today? What did you pick? What easy subject did you pick for us?
Blind obedience.
Ooh, wait. This is a problem at the very start. So let's just talk about obedience at the highest level, and then we'll try to apply this to everyday life. Because first of all, this book was actually written for religious, and you can tell that when you read it. In this case, or religious and priests, so folks who have taken a vow of obedience, which is every priest with a pulse and every religious with a pulse is right. Taking a vow of obedience. And so it's written for them. And so, but it does have relevance for us, relevance in my own life. And I think we can bring it down to practical realities for folks listening who are thinking, well, I'm not a priest or religious. How would that apply to me? But the reason the title of the show today is Blind Obedience is because that's the name of the reflection.
Right.
But it's a part of a series that Father Gabriel lays out for you on the Evangelical Council of Obedience, poverty, chastity being the other two of the three. Mm-hmm. Poverty, chastity, and obedience is a vow that every religious takes. So why obedience? I think first we have to start with, whenever we say, why should we do X, Y, or Z? Usually the answer begins with Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was the perfect, right? Yeah. He's the perfect example of obedience. He was obedient to the Father in the New Testament in everything he said. And that obedience is pure and good. And usually people don't have any issue with that. Why? Because the one the person is obeying, in this case, Jesus and God the Father, mm-hmm. is perfect and holy and good and without issue, right?
Right.
So there's nothing God's going to ever ask you to do that's going to, you know, harm your soul or do anything but bring about good. And so it's no big deal to say, oh, well, Jesus was obedient to God. Where everything begins to break down and get wrecked, if you will. When the humans enter, yeah. And was that good of grammar, get wrecked? But I like the phrase. Where everything gets ruined as you said, when humans enter the picture. And it's usually when people begin to, you know, you say obedience, usually when people begin to sit back in their chair and go, wait a minute now. You know, it's almost always because they, in their mind, there's two things going on. One, they in their mind have somebody they think they might have to obey if they agree with this teaching, right?
Right, yeah.
And who's flawed, which is the issue. Or there's a natural, this show is listened to around the world. I just speak to American culture. There's a natural aspect of American culture that I would say is hyper-individualistic. Mm-hmm. We're very much into this idea of self-rule. You know, the American Revolution, which was a breaking away from religious oppression, mm-hmm. from governmental oppression that had religious and governmental issues intertwined with it. Mm-hmm. So we have an aversion or an instinctive negative reaction to this idea of obedience in American DNA. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And even in, you know, we have different political spectrums in the United States of, you know, conservatives and liberals, but then, you know, what you might call radical conservatives and leftists on the other side. No matter where you go in the entire spectrum of even our political landscape, everyone's looking to not be subject to someone. Right?
Right, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the big battle is I don't want to be subject to this. I don't want to be subject to that. And so I think it's in the DNA of Americans. But then finally, I think it's in the DNA or it's in our spiritual condition in the area of concupiscence. Mm-hmm. So we really just want to do what we want to do. Self-rule is what we want to do. Satan fell because he wanted to, you know, non-servium, I think, is the phrase. I will not serve. I am my own rule. I am my own God or mm-hmm. whatever. So all of these are different things that really militate against this conversation of obedience.
Right.
The last thing I'll do as kind of a backdrop is for a backdrop, the understanding of the interior life of a progression of purgative, illuminative, and unitive ways, right? Mm-hmm. The purgative being kind of the beginning state of where somebody starts saying yes to God and I want to grow spiritually and move forward. All the way up to the illuminative state where you have the saints. And there are some people in this life that are in that state, you know, mm-hmm. and those are living saints. And someday, hopefully, they'll be canonized. They may never be known. But when you're in the early purgative stage, that's when you have the most negative, typically the most negative reaction to this idea of obedience or any sort of structure mm-hmm. in religious faith or even in life of being ruled. the holier you are, the better you are at this idea of obedience, and right. particularly dealing with this idea of blind obedience. So what I want to do is read real briefly a brief description of Father Gabriel's reflection that was in a few of the meditations prior. Number 122, the free sacrifice of liberty, just so we get a definition of what we're talking about with obedience. And then we'll jump into questions we have on Facebook, and I'm sure you have insights and questions as well. He says, the vow of obedience has been excellently defined as the free immolation of liberty, Pius XII. This definition stresses the idea of the freedom of our immolation. It involves a nonchalant passivity. It involves no nonchalant passivity, but an intense, noble activity consisting in the voluntary renunciation of one's own will by voluntarily submitting oneself to the will of God as expressed in the commands of our superiors. So the point being, this is not a mechanical thing. This is something where it's an act of the will. And a lot of people think that when you talk about obedience, that the will dissipates or even the intellect dissipates. But neither are true, because even in blind obedience, in quotes, we can't be obedient to a sinful command, right?
Right.
We're culpable. When we sin, we're culpable. Mm-hmm. Now, there's greater culpability, let's say, when a religious superior or a bishop or somebody who gives a command that requires obedience, there's greater culpability on the person giving the command than on the person following when it comes to sin. But nobody ever gets a pass. Nobody ever gets to stand before God and say, well, you know, Melissa told me to sin and she was my superior. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was right. just doing what she told me to do. So on Facebook, somebody said the sin will fall on the superiors, but never on the one who obeys, which is not true. And there's always culpability for sin. But the greater sin is on the one who has a place of authority over the person with lesser authority and then causes them to sin or you know, commands them to sin in some way. Mm-hmm. So to just get that out of the way, that's a typical question that people have. So in blind obedience, one important thing, important point I want to make for the break, and it relates to this getting a command, if you will, from a superior. You're still required to give of your will on the basis of what on the moral law, our moral and dogmatic beliefs regarding who God is and what's sin and what's not sin. The issue of progress in obedience is the ability to make those judgments quickly and freely and to obey them completely without hesitation. That's the top end of the spectrum in terms of the saints. The bottom end is rebellion, and maybe someplace with somebody going from good to better, it's a personal wrestling with, you know, following the will of God or the will expressed through the church. So when we get back from the break, we'll jump into a few more questions and dig more into blind obedience.
If you've always wanted to delve into the richness of the spiritual lives of the saints, the Avila Institute for Spiritual Formation offers you the unique opportunity to learn more about Catholic spiritual theology through live, interactive online courses. Whether you are seeking personal enrichment, continuing education, or a graduate certificate in spiritual theology, the Avila Institute can help. Just go to www.avila-institute.com to start your spiritual journey today.
Back to Divine Intimacy Radio. This is Dan Burke with Melissa Elson, and we're talking about obedience, the reflections. There's a series of reflections in Divine Intimacy for this period of the liturgical year that I strongly recommend that you dig into. And before the break, we talked a little bit about how it is that we can come to some clarity and understanding what it is And then we ended with some problems that are common with respect to people's reaction against this idea of obedience. I want to answer a few questions that have come in from Facebook. And this one's from Susan Skinner. She said that my dad was telling me that in Padre Pio's book that he's reading, his sister belonged to an order of sisters that decided to remove their habits back when that became a thing to do. Padre Pio's sister refused to remove her habit, and because of this, Padre Pio would not speak to her because she was disobedient to her superior. So I've never read that story, but let's just assume it's true.
Okay.
Why would he do that? So he's a religious, he's a Franciscan, and he has a concern with obedience. The reason he would do this is because she actually was being disobedient and it was a problem. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, what should she do in that case? And the bottom line is this: if the constitutions of her order are being violated by an express command of a superior, she has a conflict, mm-hmm. right? So if the constitutions of the community specify a particular kind of habit, and the superior is saying, wear a clown suit instead, right?
Right.
So just to make it as clear as we can, she has two options. One, wearing a clown suit is not a sin.
Right.
Right? Now, but the religious might think, well, but wearing a clown suit is a violation of the charism, mm-hmm. which might be for her in a realm of sin, or in her mind, you know, an area of grave violation of the charism of the founder. Well, what does she do? In my opinion, what she has to do is assess her own position or place within that order at this point. So if things begin to change and move away from what she signed up for, mm-hmm. I think it's time for her to go to her spiritual director or to the bishop and talk about, okay, I signed up for these constitutions. My order is heading this way. I have a conflict in my conscience that I can't abide. Right. And so either she has to come to a place of comfort that she's not sinning, which is too difficult to discern, you know, at this level with this example, mm-hmm. or she has to say, my order has left its moorings, mm-hmm. and I need to find another Franciscan expression or whatever to become a part of and
move. Would St. Teresa of Avila, would her situation kind of be in the same realm?
Right.
Because she wanted to go back to the way things were.
Right. And just to give clarity on what you're saying, there was a particular rule that was enacted by the Pope at the time, and then prior popes had enacted different modifications to the Carmelite rule or allowed for them. Mm-hmm. And the rule that she encountered when she was first received into in the incarnation, when she went into the convent, was a more lax rule than the one that she eventually used implemented in the reform. Mm-hmm. So in this case, you know, she came to a place where at the incarnation, for instance, they had a caste system that mimicked society. So nuns from wealthy families had bigger cells and they could have mm-hmm. pets and they could have visitors mm-hmm. and were clearly violating the original intent of the order and the charism with respect to the cloister and prayer and that sort of thing. So in this case, what she decided to do or felt called to do by the Lord and probably was commissioned to do by God, I should say I don't really have any doubt about that because of the fruits of it, is she decided to reform the order. Mm-hmm. But she didn't disobey her superior in how she fulfilled her vow of obedience. What instead she did is she went and said to another superior who had authority to make these decisions, look, you know, I would like to help to recover the original intent of our charism and to live that out. Can I have permission to do that? And so she's still in obedience, mm-hmm. but she's, you know, she's pursuing a, what we might call a deeper obedience to the original charism in line of authority. So she didn't, in terms of her work in the incarnation, she didn't say to her superior, no, I reject what you're saying. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to abide by this. Instead, she said, you know, I'm having issues with this. I feel like God's calling me to reform and correct this to a superior outside of that convent. Mm-hmm. And they said, yes, we support that. We recognize the need to bring about reform. So that's another healthy way mm-hmm. that can be mitigated. But you can't just disobey. And I think that was, if that's the situation with Padre Pio and his sister, that's probably why, if he would have stopped talking with her, that he would do that. Now, he also would know her fairly well. He had the gift of reading souls. I don't know if he ever took her confession. I don't know what she confessed to him. You know, she may have had a very rebellious spirit. I don't know.
Right.
In general, which had only was manifested through this situation. But the problem with all of these kinds of scenarios is it's very difficult to assess. Mm-hmm. Let's bring it down to what we should do.
Right.
As lay people. Now, me as a lay person, I have taken vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience to the charism of Apostoli Vii. That's the community that I'm involved with. How does that play out for me? It's closer to religious life in the sense that I'm under obedience to the chancellor of the diocese and the bishop of the diocese with respect to the charism of a private association of the faithful, meaning that I'm going to live in a particular way, and I'm committing myself to do that. Why would I do that? Well, because I know I need it for my salvation, because I feel called to the charism, because the charism gives me clarity in the way that I pray, the way that I live, the way that I deal with the community, the way that I express my Catholic faith and all of that. And I feel specifically called to it, and I want to abandon myself to it. So I've thought about it for years and prayed about it for years. And I talked with the bishop about it and spiritual directors. And I said, hey, I want to take this vow. And I was given permission to, and now I'm accountable to it. So that, and I want to be accountable to it. Mm-hmm. So it gives me clarity, and it gives me peace that I'm on a very specific spiritual course that people outside of my judgment, my weakness, my sinfulness, my desire, look in and say, you're on target or you're off target, mm-hmm. according to what you say you want to live by publicly. So as a lay person, I wanted to get the benefit that a religious does when they take the same vow. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So now let's exit that kind of quasi religious realm. I'm not a religious, but I'm a lay person that's doing some things that most people would associate with religious. And other lay people can do that in the charism, including we have consecrated members and others who are investigating the charism, who even are diocesan priests and that sort of thing, who want more greater clarity. But when you step outside of that, we have all of the basic precepts of the church that we're given, mm-hmm. you know, that we're called to be obedient to, right? Sunday Mass, annual confession, though we should do that way more than that if we want to be healthy spiritually,
right.
Not violating the moral law, those sorts of things that we promise at our baptism mm-hmm. that we will follow, that we'll resist the devil, if we take those promises as adults or we reaffirm them later mm-hmm. In different ways. So obedience isn't just for religious. It plays out in everything we do. But you had a thought regarding children and obedience.
Well, just, yeah, in the family, I see it with my own children that they're kind of born with a rebellious spirit. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do what I ask them to do. And all children are that way. And what I think is hilarious is my 5-year-old will say, I want to be the ruler. I don't want anyone to rule me.
Oh, did he actually say that?
Well, a girl, but yes, she did. And she said, I need to, or I'll have to have servants who do what I ask them to do. It's like, you've been reading too many stories about kings and queens and
right.
things like that. So, it's pretty funny, but you can see it in the little ones. And what's the, and I think of myself all the time in relation to God as a little child, because mm-hmm. That's exactly what I feel like, is that I get rebellious about things I'm supposed to be doing or what he wants me to do. And then I think back to my kids. I'm like, well, why do I tell him to do the things? You know, is it just because I just want to be mean, you know, and say, no, you just can't do it. Ha ha ha. I'm, you
yeah.
know, taking something away. No, it's because it's for their good, their greater good.
Right.
And, you know, God acts the same way towards us. And as he says in, I believe it's in Matthew, he mm-hmm. says, unless you're like one of these little ones.
Matthew 18.
Yeah, Matthew 18, you will not enter
the kingdom of heaven.
So,
And that, when he's talking about those little ones, often it's a little bit more of an innocent period, right?
Right.
Which your daughter is already.
Yeah. Well, not, yeah, not.
Your daughter's
not
already,
acting quite like that.
Your daughter's already, exiting, which is funny. But yeah, I mean, that's concupiscence showing its way, right? And being obedient militates against which vices? Pride, vanity, mm-hmm. wrath. Being obedient to God militates against all of those vices and helps to prepare our hearts for heaven, to get us to heaven.
Right. One of the reflections a little earlier, number 120 in Divine Intimacy on the value of obedience, St. John of the Cross said, God wants from us the least degree of obedience and submission rather than all the works we desire to offer him. And Father Gabriel says, why? Because obedience makes us surrender our will to adhere to God's will as expressed in the orders of our superiors. So it sums it up pretty well there. You know, yeah, like you were saying, it's just you need to exercise conforming your will to God's will. And that's very difficult.
And I know somebody listening is going, but that makes me less of who I am. And that's not true. Mm-mm. What it does when you conform your will to God is it makes you the best version, if you've heard that before, the best version of who God intends you to be,
right.
Which is Melissa most like Jesus, or Dan most like Jesus. We don't lose Melissa and we don't lose Dan. Mm-hmm. We keep those, but we become the most beautiful versions of who Melissa is called to be and the most beautiful version that Dan is called to be in terms of being like Christ and conformed to the will of God. Mm-hmm. But it is normal that when left to our own devices, when left to our own will and we have nothing to be obedient to, or we seek to not be subject to anyone or anything, is that our concupiscence and our vices will draw us, the world, the flesh, and the devil will draw us away from that most beautiful reality into distortions, into, I'm even thinking of ugly masks, into corruptions of all of those beautiful things about us that God intends for his glory and for his kingdom.
Right. But we have to go.
Oh, that's bad.
Until next time, may the God of peace make you perfect in holiness. May he preserve you whole and entire, spirit, soul, and body, irreproachable at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Learn more about the interior life. Visit spiritualdirection.com. Divine Intimacy Radio is a co-production of EWTN Radio and spiritualdirection.com and heard worldwide on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.